The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.
The front page of the Sunday Mail, Mail on Sunday, I should say, leads with the story saying, Harris, I'll end the triple lock on troops in weeks. This is the triple lock that requires a UN mandate to send Irish troops on peacekeeping missions. And Simon Harris apparently wants that unpicked so that the Irish government will be able to send troops on missions without them being UN peacekeeping missions. This seems to be another in the incremental shifts that we're seeing in EU and wider European approach to defence and to militarisation. If you're listening yesterday, you will have heard us talking about the clip from Sir Alex Younger, the former head of MI6, who said that we are moving into an era of the strong man, as in the Putin, Trump, Xi Jinping, making deals rather than an era of international law and international agencies which would have preceded it. And what that means for states across Europe is if you want to be at the table, you have to be militarily at the table. To analyse the implications of that, I'm joined by Dominic Ruiz de Vesa, who is a former MEP and president of the Union of European Federalists, George Parker, political editor of the Financial Times, and Bobby McDonough, former Irish ambassador to the UK and to the EU. And Bobby, let me begin with you, because there are obviously two layers to this. There are the public pronouncements being made by government, and there are the backroom conversations that happen in response to these kind of global shifts. Can you give us an insight into what the latter are like and what is likely to be being discussed?
Well, if you're talking about the European Union, I mean, we know publicly that President Macron took the initiative of convening a meeting with key European partners, as well as NATO and the European Commission on last Monday, and had a wider online meeting involving a wider group of all the European countries plus Canada. And we know that each country will have been bringing its own point of view to bear on that. We know that the European Union and Europe generally makes advances through the pressure of events rather than through institutional tinkering. And it's proved that before in relation to COVID and Brexit and so on. And there's no greater existential challenge than the war in Europe. But there's no immediate solution. It's an extraordinarily complex world. You have 27 democracies, plus the UK is now working much more closely with Europe than we would have thought imaginable at the time of Brexit. That's a hugely important thing. Europe was weakened by the departure of the UK. And now we have Starmer talking yesterday to von der Leyen and today to Macron, and himself and Macron going separately to Washington this week. So it's a gradual process of producing a more coherent and effective response in Europe to what Trump is doing. And it's essential because, of course, Trump has not just reversed the US policy on Ukraine and replaced rational thought with Putin speaking points, but in general, he's taking a new approach to global relationships, very much, as you say, the strongman approach. But just because he and the presidents of Russia and China take that approach doesn't mean that Europe has to abandon the rule of law or human rights or multilateralism. But it does mean we have to be far more effective than we have been until now.
Can I get you, as a former ambassador to the EU, to expand on a term you used there? You described it as an existential crisis for the Union. Why?
Well, because like we in Ireland have it fairly easy. I mean, geography has been cruel to us and kind. It was cruel to us because we were beside a large island that dominated us for so long in history. But it's been kind to us because we find ourselves on the periphery of Western Europe. But let's not make any mistake about it. The safety of Ireland's democracy and the preservation of our freedom and the protection of our decent society for the coming generations depends on Europe's strength. It depends on Europe's capacity to resist Putin's brutality in Ukraine. And of course, Putin has made clear that he won't stop there. We have to work with our European partners to prevent what have already happened, like the cyber attacks which affected our HSE and potential attacks on underwater cables. So it's absolutely existential. We have to deal with fairly complex questions and take a balanced approach here in Ireland. But we have to recognise that that's against the background of a real world in which there are strong men and in which Putin is has behaved and is behaving in an extremely brutal way because he's offended by European democracy, and in which we can no longer rely on the United States. Now, that doesn't mean we shouldn't continue to try to work with the United States insofar as we can, because Trump's unpredictability works both ways. He may do and say awful things, but then he sometimes pulls back from them. And there are debates within the administration. And we know that many of the Republicans in Congress, on whom Trump depends, don't agree at all with his approach to Ukraine. So we have to do two things. We have to, as Europeans collectively, and to be more serious about how we approach these things. And within that, Ireland needs to particularly decide what role it needs to play, not because others are telling us to do it, but out of self-respect and for our interests. But we also have to try and engage with the US insofar as that's possible.
George Parker is with us as well. He's political editor of the Financial Times. And George, Bobby McDonagh there was talking about the engagement that we are seeing from the UK Prime Minister, engagement that would have been very hard to predict in its closeness and in enthusiasm when we look back to the beginnings of Brexit. What do you read into that? And what do you think the UK singularly and working with the wider European Union can achieve given the shifts that we're seeing globally?
Well, we know that Keir Starmer fiercely opposed Brexit, and we knew that as soon as he became Prime Minister, he would try to rebuild or reset, as he calls it, relations between the UK and the European Union. But I think what we've seen in the last few weeks since the Trump inauguration has been an acceleration of that process. And of course, you know, security and defence are the areas that are bringing the two sides closer together. And it just so happens, of course, the UK, along with France, are the two preeminent Western European military powers. So there's plenty to be gained on both sides. And, you know, I think Starmer talks about himself being potentially a bridge between Europe and Washington. I suspect that could turn out to be rather vainglorious. He's heading off to Washington this week, trying to build a bridge across to Donald Trump. I think it's going to be a Herculean task. But yeah, I mean, certainly it's sort of forcing the Europeans and the Brits to look afresh at the relationship.
In relation to the flashpoint currently, of course, which is the war in Ukraine, Donald Trump and the administration were directly abusive in respect of the UK's what they perceive to be lack of support for Ukraine, lack of activity in relation to Ukraine, general lack of funding and general weakness. How has that gone down and will it have any impact on UK policy?
Well, I don't think it's particularly glorious, but I mean, I think the approach being taken by Keir Starmer since the inauguration has been to keep his head down, try to avoid picking fights with Donald Trump, try to exert some influence, whatever influence he can, behind the scenes, and we'll see that in Washington this week. I mean, it's factually incorrect to say that Britain hasn't been playing its part. I mean, certainly in case of Ukraine, whatever you think of Boris Johnson, he was one of the first European leaders to really throw his weight behind the military campaign that Ukraine was fighting against Russia. And the British are one of the few countries in NATO with spending above 2% of their GDP on defence. You know, it's 2.3% anyway. So let's talk about it going higher. So I think, it does cause grief. There are a lot of people in the Labour Party on this side of the Irish Sea who would love Keir Starmer to go to Washington and do a sort of a Hugh Grant moment in Love Actually and stand up to the American president. I don't think we're going to see that. I think we're going to see a lot of diplomacy. I think we're going to see a deployment of the royal family and the possibility of a state visit. Anything, frankly, to try to keep Donald Trump engaged in Europe. And this is the number one priority of this trip, I think, that Starmer's undertaking next week, is to maintain that American security guarantee in some shape or form in Europe. Because if it's not there, then the Europeans are going to have to move very, very fast and very decisively to make up for that gap.
Now, on that note, Dominic Rees-Devesa is with us. He's a former MEP and president of the European Union of Federalists. Dominic, one of the advantages that, to use Alex Younger's term, that the strong man has, is a capacity to be authoritarian and to command a response. The EU is a consensus organization of multiple different states with multiple, often conflicting ideologies. Does the European Union have the capacity to act fast in terms of shoring up its security in the way that George describes, if that comes to pass?
Well, I think the EU is in a situation that it needs to act fast, really. Because in a way, you could say that Europe is standing alone right now. There is an emergence of a Trump but Putin axis, at least at the regional level, and regarding Ukraine, you could make the parallelism with Britain in 1940 at the moment. Because it is very clear with the Americans, we cannot rely for supporting Ukraine, and that means we cannot rely for Europe's security, and we cannot rely for anymore for the security guarantee, and maybe also not anymore for the U.S. forces in Europe. So we really need to act fast in order to develop a system of European defense that is not reliant on the Americans and not reliant on NATO, even. Even though we can conceive it as a European pillar of NATO, but always with the possibility to activate it.
And Dominic, do you think there is
now,
an appetite for that?
I think there is an urgent need for that. If there is no appetite, I will challenge EU leaders to tell me what else needs to happen. Do we need to wait until the Russians are in Warsaw to set it up?
Let me go back to Bobby McDonough then. Bobby, from an Irish perspective, you described geography as being advantageous to us and disadvantageous depending on the situation. We have largely been able to exempt ourselves from these kind of discussions and issues, in part by geography, in part by recent history. Can we continue to do that?
Well, we haven't been completely exempt. We've tried to take a constructive approach in Europe. For example, we have been one of the most prominent in calling for Europe to be open to Ukrainian accession to the EU and so on. I think the reality is that to an extent, we probably could continue to do what we're doing. We're not going to come under great pressure from our European partners or from NATO. We don't have, at the moment, the military capacity to contribute very much. But for our own self-respect and our own interests, if we want to defend the interests of our people and to take pride in our independence, then we really have to step up to the plate. I mean, yes, it will help us in our relations with our partners if we do more, and we have started doing somewhat more, for example, by promising to increase military expenditure. But to an extent, we can also take a free ride. And clearly, the government is now more serious than governments have been in the past about us making a more serious contribution. I mean, some examples would be not just the increase in domestic expenditure, but Ireland has contributed its full share of financial support from the EU to Ukraine, including the military support. So even though we have given our assistance through the non-military end, we've paid our full share of the support. And the Taoiseach has also made clear, it's a fairly obvious point, but we totally support the right of our partners to spend on their own defence, which some people have questioned. So you know, there is definitely, it was mentioned earlier in the programme that the government is looking at ending the triple lock. So in different ways, the government is not doing nothing. But to an extent, you know, it's not so much people are going to pile pressure on. It's a question of how serious we want to be as a country in the world. And I think we are moving in the right direction. And the government has to make a choice between continuing the practical progress, which it is doing, or doing something a bit more major and risking a fall in domestic political support. Because what the government has been doing has been broadly with domestic support. If it went much further than it is going, then it's not so much the support for the political parties. I wouldn't personally care about that, but it's support for what they're trying to do would fall. If, for example, they said they were going to end Irish neutrality. So I think Ireland has to take itself seriously. It is beginning to do that, and it faces a dilemma as to how far to go.
Bobby, thank you very much. That's Bobby McDonough, former Irish ambassador to the UK and the EU, and before him, George Parker, political editor of the Financial Times, and Dominic Ruiz de Vesa, former MEP and president of the European Union of Federalists.
The Anton Savage Show on News Talk.